Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
That, the voice of Jameson Taillon after giving up not one, but two more home runs after he had a good stretch, strong outings, being the de facto ace in Shota Imanaga's absence, as we are broadcasting live from Gallagher Way here on Raheem and Harris. Mark Grody in for Layla, who is off today. Cubs Mariners coming up. Zach Zaman will do his pregame show from here starting at 12:45, leading up to first pitch. It's all brought to you by IDOT. The Illinois Department of Transportation is here with activities to show you how you can be safe driving home from the game. Visit itsnotagameillinois.com to learn more. And if you want to check out, for the people who are here, the IDOT 10, it's right to the right of us, your left, stage left, if you will. They're over there giving out stuff. They got swag. They're playing games. So a good time over there. But right now, let's welcome in Lance Brodzowski. He's on the artist formerly known as Twitter at Lance Broz. That's LanceBroz. Normally, he would be joining us via the Circa Resort hotline, but you know what? Today, he's with us in
We're studio. Live, baby.
he's down. You can download the Circa Sports app today. So, Lance, let's get started with the question that everybody has on their minds.
Let me hear it.
They want to know, when is Shota Imanaga actually going to be back?
Yeah, so he's rehabbing today in Iowa, and I anticipate him joining the team for the road trip. I don't know if that's been announced, but we'll see how this obviously the outing goes today in Iowa and then go from there. But he would line up to probably pitch one of those games in St. Louis, which would be a really nice return. So we'll see. We'll see if that lines up.
Okay, so you think this could be his last rehab start?
I think for the most part, it depends on pitch count and how many times he gets turnover lineup, et cetera, and how he looks, where the velo's at. We'll have that public data, too. It's cool when the guy gets to AAA. Look at that right after the start happens. So I'm optimistic about it, obviously. I think that it's getting to the point now where he's imminent in terms of his return.
And the next biggest question is, well, Porter Hodge has been down there for a minute. He was the closer at one point this season, and another back of the bullpen arm. When will he be back?
Yeah, so I think Taylor McGregor reported the other day that with Marquee that he is going to either begin a rehab assignment today or tomorrow. So you'll have a confluence of major league arms in Iowa. If you happen to be in Iowa, it's obviously a good game to get to see either of those guys. But yeah, that's a piece that I think they're pretty excited to get back. Again, it just forces a lot of the guys who've been really good. Palencia has been amazing, obviously, in the back end. But the ability to push those guys into almost less leverage roles is great. You can match up Palencia and Hodge based on who you feel is coming up and given orders. I imagine they might share some of the closer duties. That'll be interesting to see. But Palencia has been so good. Maybe just leave him in there. Higher velo than Hodge. Hodge with a big sweeper, a little better to righties. So I'm fascinated to see how they use the bullpen. And then especially as you get towards the deadline, and they eventually maybe add another piece, how that piece eventually slots in to Hodge, Palencia, some of the lefties, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's why I think when Shota, we were having this conversation yesterday, when Shota comes back, who's the odd man out, and what do you do with the odd man out? I mean, the easy name is Ben Brown in terms of the starting rotation, unless there's something we don't know. Marshall suggested yesterday maybe you send him down to the minors to keep him stretched out to be a spot starter. My thought was, put this man into the bullpen because it seems like that might be the ideal fit for him. Do you think that that's what happens with Ben Brown, or do you, through your eyes from what you do and following development, should Ben Brown stay in the starting rotation?
Yeah, I mean, my dream is for him to be a starter long term. I imagine he wants to do that as well. That's where his most upside is. I'm actually fascinated to see if they move Ray into more of a tweener role and keep Brown. And I think that the wild card here is what they end up doing with Cade Horton. Obviously, he only threw, like, what is it, 30-something innings last year. That is the big thing to consider in terms of where the ultimate workload gets to by the end of the year. I'm not entirely sure what they end up doing because it's a weird thing where, okay, maybe you just let him fire all the bullets now and he's your starter until you eventually get to the deadline. Like, maybe he's a deadline bridge. Exactly. Because the weird thing would be, okay, if he hits some workload interval that they're maybe a little bit – they see some fatigue start to build up, then you maybe scale him back. Then the question is, okay, does he turn to the pen and you keep using him, or does he, say, go to AAA and pitch in these crochet-style 2-3-4-inning stints where you're keeping the workload at a manageable level, and then you can maybe bring him back up, ramp him into more of a reliever role where the velo ticks up. So They have some like pieces to play with here that I'm very interested to see how they use. My bet is that Ray moves out of a pure starter role and that Brown stays in.
Stays in there. Okay. I like that. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to continue to see because there's enough special moments for Ben Brown,
yeah,
even in bad games that he's had where he's got like 9 strikeouts and 1 walk where you're like, and he's given up home, or like early runs and then runs maybe late in the game, but you're like, there's something going on there that
we need
to continue.
Flashes of glory, yeah.
Flashes of glory, well put. Yes.
All right, so Lance Brzezdowski joining us here as we broadcast live from Gallagher Way here on Raheemy and Harris. Mark Grody in, Layla has the day off. And Lance, it's interesting because there are puzzle pieces, and this is a better problem to have than the one they had last season when they didn't know where they were going to get their late high leverage arms from. But they have almost a glutton of those this year. I'm curious as to what you just said about moving Palencia around maybe when Porter Hodge comes back. Is it not, in your estimation, Palencia's job now?
It feels like it.
If he came back, Porter Hodge feels like a situational eighth-inning guy, just depending on the matchup that you mix in with a number of guys now. See, it feels like you have like 4 or 5 guys you depend on, if you're Craig Counsell, to get out of late, high-leverage situations.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I mean, you look at the beginning of the year, I feel like everyone was kind of panicking about the bullpen, and I think the topic was like, they're going to need a leverage closer. What does Helsley cost with the Cardinals trading division, et cetera. Now it's moved towards more, you need probably another frontline guy to jump into a 3-4 game set with the team and go, okay, it's Shota, and then it's this pitcher that we're acquiring to lead this rotation into the playoffs and make a deep run. I think the pressure has been taken off the bullpen mostly, where maybe they just go with a more moderate in-between arm. You know, various names have been mentioned, like Anthony Bender with the Marlins. Maybe not a guy you would slot in above Palencia or Hodge, but provides you that middle depth. You know, Theobar and Pomeranz have looked amazing. Flexen's looked really good. There's obviously going to be some regression with some of those guys coming, I think, in terms of the peripherals, but I would love to see Pomeranz be a guy in the playoffs that has like this second life and
wind. Keep it going.
That'd
yeah.
be really amazing, I think, for him as a career standpoint.
Based on your analysis and what you do as far as player development for Marquis on that side, Lance, who do you see as being the biggest candidate for some of the regression that you're talking about? Like, hey, they've been able to do it amazingly to this point of the season, but like, I don't expect Drew Pomeranz to have a 0 ERA season long.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he throws a ton of one pitch. It's an odd four-seam fastball with not a ton of velo, but like a lot of that vertical break. It's a weird high slot. He's probably more like a 3-ish ERA guy, you know, but he's at 0. And the thing with relievers, and they'll tell you this as well, I mean, I've talked to, I'm sure you guys have as well, is like, they have one bad outing and it takes them a month to correct that ERA. It's the inverse as well, right? Where it's like, you could run into a 20-inning stretch where you have a 0 ERA, and it's like, listen, I'm probably not a 0 ERA guy going forward, but I'm happy to put that on my resume. But so
he's definitely built himself some grace and good fortune in the future with how long he's gone. He's got the longest active scoreless appearances streak in the majors right now. And you're looking at a guy like Ryan Pressly, who's also not giving up runs, but he's just now getting his ERA into the mid-3s because of what happened against San Francisco, giving up the 9 runs, 8 of them earned. Also, looking at Pete Crow Armstrong and what he's done, was there anything analytically that you saw that would lead to you to believe that on June 20th, this man would have 20 home runs?
No, I don't think so. I mean, listen, like the power surge here has been just unbelievable. I was looking at today's game, actually, Cal Raleigh and Pete Crow Armstrong have 2 of the 3 highest pulled fly ball rates. So Pete is getting to this point where he's chasing a lot. The walks are low. The strikeouts are relatively average. And you go, okay, he's going to regress. But I'm not entirely sure if he's going to regress from a power standpoint, particularly because of how effective he's been at pulling fly balls. If you look at just the distribution of what a pulled fly ball slug is relative to, like, center field, it's almost triple. Like, you're slugging near 1,600 on pulled fly balls, and it's more around 500 to center field. It's just a basic wall size thing, right? So the ability for Pete to pull velo has been incredibly impressive. I wonder whether it doesn't regress as many people expect because of that element of his ability to get through things poolside, where again, like, you get colder, you get into deep winter here, so to speak, in October, where you hopefully have some playoff
sure.
games, and some of those balls maybe die at the track. But his ability to maximize that element of his game, I'll still go back to that Hunter Green homer, 99 out of third that he pulled. Insane home run. Like, that is a swing that very few players in baseball can achieve and actually put barrel the ball on.
And it's amazing, too, because when he first came up, he couldn't hit velocity.
I know, it's crazy. And the thing was, that this, the I think sometimes we miss on like scouting reports. We could talk Matt Shaw. I don't know if we were talking Matt Shaw, but he's one where I thought the scouting report there, for the most part, coming up was like 15 to 20 homers.
Shaw, you're talking about?
Shaw. Yeah. And it's like, it's flipped now where it's like he's almost playing as if he's like a version of Nico Hormer where it's so inside out, it's just average, there's no pull side pop. Pete, on the other hand, the hope there all the time, I remember Jim Callis and I were talking about this on Road to Wrigley, was like, just get him to a league average OBP because this guy's one of the best defenders in the history of the sport, arguably. You know what I mean?
There's Denzel a place Clark for that. No matter what, there's always going to be a place for that. No,
and it's like, you get to league average OBP, this guy's 4 to 5 WAR a season. He's unbelievable.
And now we're saying he doesn't even need to necessarily, and you hope he does because he's 23 years old, he doesn't need to necessarily get to league average OBP.
No, exactly.
He's going to slug over 500, 100%. Then you have a different type of hitter. It's like, get on the base pass, even if it's not. Let's say his career OBP is somewhere between 310 and 315. You'd live with that if he's going to slug for 500 for his career.
100%. It's an equation, right? Like, batting average, OBP, and slug. Like, obviously, slug and OBP are the ones that are pushed into the models that teams are going to value a lot more. But you can slug enough to make up for poor OBP. We've seen a lot of guys do this in the league. And Pete is slugging so much that it's making up for a relatively average OBP, so it's impressive.
This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. What if you could save an average 95% for dental implants and get 100% of your smile back? Well, with medical PPO insurance, it's possible. Check if you qualify at AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Joined here by Lance Brodzowski. He's in player development on the Marquee side. He's out here telling you who's coming up on that road to Wrigley, and that's one of the things. But you brought up a guy I was going to ask you about with Matt Shaw. I am shocked that as well as he's hit for average since he's come back from that early, let's say, not up to par performance when he broke out of camp, he has not shown hardly any power. How concerned are you about that for Matt Shaw?
I don't think I'm particularly concerned. I mean, we've seen a lot of other guys come up and be like various versions of themselves before they settle in. Like, think about Nick Kurtz with the Athletics is a great one where he's now mashing and he was terrible to start. He felt like a surefire first baseman that would be unbelievable. Christian Campbell, one of the top prospects in all of baseball with the Red Sox,
he just got sent back down
to AAA. Yeah. So, like, it takes some time for guys to show you who they really are. But I will admit, it's a little bit, I wouldn't say surprising. It's just not exactly what I thought Shaw would be at the major league level, to be so inside out, so average driven. To Jim Callis and I, we were talking about this where we viewed him as more of like the 15 to 20 pop guy, maybe 260, 270 average with a reasonable OBP. He's kind of like a do-everything guy, like does everything well, can play good defense, can play second or third if you want, et cetera. And now it's like, okay, playing much better defense than I think everybody thought, and average is fantastic, and all his barrels are coming to right field, so it's a weird profile. Like, it is an odd profile. I was talking earlier about pull fly balls and how important that is. If you want to look optimistically, like long-term at Shaw, it's a matter of like, okay, if we can get some of these pulled fly balls back, then you start to see the slug and everything tick up. And I wonder if there's some balance that they're going to try to strike eventually with him. But for now, he's productive going the other way so much, so stick with it. And I understand that there's no pressure on him to be a 450, 500 slug guy. So just let him do what he's doing. Like, he's playing at an above-average rate. They haven't had third-base production.
Especially with the way that he started the season and he's figured something out, then maybe you add whatever adjustment they made with him in the minors, maybe you continue to adjust for power.
100%, yep.
And, you know, so just let it ride out, whatever it is. If it's low home runs, I'm okay with that. Let me ask you, I got another question about Cade Horton, because I was asking Ron Coomer about it. And Ron Coomer, like I kind of said, I don't know what Cade Horton is. Maybe he's a middle of the rotation guy. Maybe he's a number three. Ron Coomer said he's got one or two stuff, like he could be top of the rotation. Do you think Cade Horton can eventually be a top, and I know how early it is and ridiculous to prognosticate this stuff, but does he have top of the rotation stuff, in your opinion, Lance?
Yeah, I mean, with prospects, a lot of times you're looking at some range of outcomes. So a lot of the time that top end range of outcome is frontline. It's just the matter of like how often you're actually getting there. My perception of Cade is that he's much more of like a 3-2.
Okay.
And I say that because he cuts his fastball a lot.
Yeah.
Generally, those pitches don't miss bats. If you look at some of the best aces of baseball, these true ones we're talking about, they all have fastballs that can miss bats. So that is the thing to focus on is like, okay, over time, can this fastball miss more bats than it has particularly? That's the angle I would look at it. If you actually want a one, think of all the ones, Wheeler, Skuball, Skeens. Those are all like 60-plus, 70-plus fastballs in terms of grade. They're fantastic. Cade's fastball sets up everything else in his mix. I don't think Cade's intent is to throw 50% fastball and two-strike counts. Like, he's trying to get you to the sweeper. He's trying to get you to the change in the curve to lefties. That's his bread and butter. It's like, let me get you. I will throw this cut fastball over the plate. I bet you won't barrel it. When you foul it off and I get you into two strikes, you're done because my secondaries are good. Mm. But it's that fastball playability from a whiff standpoint for me that accelerates you into like the rung of ones. So that's my hesitancy. It's like, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. Like,
yeah.
If he ends up being a three for his whole career,
it's okay.
Sign me up. I think everybody in the org would be happy with
Amen.
That.
Lance Brzezdowski joining us to talk everything Cubs, the player development analyst for Marquee Sports Network. Lance, before we let you go, I have a pressing question.
Let me hear it.
Because I've seen a lot of different things, a lot of different approaches by Craig Counsell. Do you think at this stage we're done, unless it's like a doubleheader situation or something happens injury-wise, with the opener?
Oh, the opener, yeah. I mean, I really liked what they did with Pomeranz in there, particularly because those two teams that faced the Reds and I forget the other team. But
Mets,
yeah, lefty heavy off the top. And the Reds, if you could flip Ellie around to the right side, that gives you an advantage. So the concept there was like, okay, if we're getting four or five ABs from Ellie, we could take one of those and make an extreme disadvantage for him. Fantastic. If we could do it off the top of the game, Friedel, you want to lead him off still? Sure, Pomeranz is going to mow through him. So I wonder whether it's a matter of looking at the opposing team in terms of lineup construction. Are they lefty heavy at the top, and can you use a Pomeranz to help mitigate any stress that a Ray or a Brown might run into? Those are probably the only guys you're going to do it against. You don't need it with Boyd. You don't need it eventually with Shota when he comes back. But I think it's more a matter of the opposing team as opposed to the Cubs being like, yes, we're opening the next four games because it's fun and it worked. It's more like, can we get an advantage here? Can we flip a hitter that's really good from this side of the plate to, you know, 25% less in terms of that productivity in a given game?
Certainly changes the narrative when you talk about going through an order potentially three times. If you don't have to face the top of that order a first time in the first inning, you might get through five innings and not have to face that top of the order until the fifth or sixth inning. That could change the dynamic of a ball game. Lance, we appreciate you stopping by to join us. I know you got a lot of marquee duties, but we, on this Sammy Sosa day, we celebrate it with you by having you on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right, so that's Lance Brzezdowski, player development analyst for Marquee Sports Network. Go follow him if you're not already on the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Lance Broz. That's LanceBroz. I want to tell you guys right now, you can get tickets, not to this game, because this thing looks like it's going to be sold out as the rain is kind of laid off.
Yeah.
We got clearer skies. There's still some cloudiness, but we're expecting it to all burn off in about an hour or so. And the system that was plaguing us, falling apart. That's what I've been told by Ryan Porth. It's falling apart.
It's all on you, buddy.
So we're going to have baseball, according to Ryan Porth. If we don't have baseball, blame Ryan Porth, not me.
Put it on me.
But I want to tell you, you can listen all week for your chance to win a pair of general admission tickets to Windy City Smokeout. That's on Saturday, July 12th. Performances by Kane Brown, Megan Maroney, and more. For tickets, visit WindyCitySmokeout.com. Keep listening. Coming up next, we go back to the phone lines, back to your text. We want to get your thoughts. Sammy Sosa back in the building. Are you excited? Are you conflicted? Or are you like, nah, that man needs to stay away from here? Well, he's here. Accept it. In fact, he's going to be on the broadcast of the game with Pat and Ron coming up later today, scheduled to join them in the booth. That's one of the many things that's happening today at Wrigley Field for Game 1 against the Mariners. We'll be back with more. Raheemi and Harris with Mark Grody in on 670 The Score. That was the call of home run number 62 because Sammy Sosa used to hit home runs. My favorite thing about a Sammy Sosa home run is you weren't like, hey, is that going to be a home run? No, it was gone. That's all it was. It was over and done with. As we are broadcasting live from Gallagher Way leading up to Cubs Mariners here at Wrigley Field, Zach Zabin will do his pregame show right from here at Gallagher Way at 12:45. That leads up to first pitch. It's all brought to you by IDOT, the Illinois Department of Transportation. They're here with activities to show you how you can be as safe driving home from the game as possible. Visit itsnotagainillinois.com to learn more. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris here, leading you up into that pregame show. And it's been a day where we thought we were going to talk about all these different things. We are talking about PCA, the fastest Cub to ever reach 2020. That's 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases in a tough loss yesterday to the Brewers. So the division's not clinched, right? Because your whole thing was if they beat the Brewers, the division is clinched.
Yeah. See, that's the whole thing. If the Cubs had won last night and had gone up 7.5 games, we wouldn't be talking about Sammy Sosa at all today. We'd be celebrating the division championship.
No.
I now have to push it off just a little. It's still inevitable. It's still going to happen. My confidence has not wavered in any way, shape, or form. It's just that we can't have the official clinching party at this point. But it will happen. It might get closer.
I picture Grody sitting at home last night with the champagne on ice, ready to pop the champagne. Oh, PCA's up next. We're good. Double play by Suzuki. The game is over, and the champagne must go back into wherever the champagne goes for Grody.
We're going to get back to these phone calls for Sammy, but I will just say, like, just when you're starting to – and any starting pitcher is going to have a bad start every once in a while. I don't know why I was expecting Jameson Taillon to continue on the run that he has been on, but I did expect it. Like, every single time that I've bought fully into Jameson Taillon and maybe moving up to where you feel like he's a top, you know, two guy in a rotation, something like yesterday happens – I'm by no means it's been a really nice run for Jameson Taillon, but I was highly disappointed. And then just bouncing back to Sammy Sosa, let me just share this really quickly. Listening to that 60-second home run for Sosa in 1998, the highlight there. For me personally, in 1998, Sammy Sosa was a pain in the ass. Here's why. I had never been in a Cubs clubhouse, okay? I actually was working at the Score in 1998, like on a very part-time basis. I was working full-time downstate and then literally driving up at odd times, like on Saturdays and Sundays, to do scoreboard updates. Part of the update guy's job back then, before, you know, we hired other full-time producers and things like that, I had to cut my own highlights and all that kind of stuff, like everything. Like, I had to sit there, I had a VHS tape in on the TV, then I'd run to the production studio, I'd cut up the audio. So I'm constantly having to cut up Sammy Sosa home runs and get them on the air as soon as possible. So while it was a blast, like, he hit another home run and the Score back on the bunker on Belmont, everybody would go crazy, Grody, the home run, you got the home run. I'm like this guy coming in 3 hours from Central Illinois, feeling this pressure of trying to get this stuff on the air. So part of me, when I hear that, like, it brings back the stress that I was feeling trying to prove myself as a broadcaster at the Score.
No stress right now as the rain starts to fall here at Gallagher Way. Let's get back to the phone lines.
What?
312-644-6767. Yeah, it's raining right now, but it's a light drizzle. Don't be discouraged. Come say hi to Mark Grody and myself, Marshall Harris, as we're broadcasting live from Gallagher Way. Let's go to Ryan in Lake Geneva. Ryan, you're on the Score. Sammy Sosa, he's in the building. What are your thoughts?
Write that down, Robbie.
Oh, I love it. Oh, excuse me. Bro, it's good to hear you regularly on the show.
Oh, thank you. Fan. I appreciate that. Thank you. Bears.
I think that it's ridiculous. Like, I think the Major League gave them the steroids. It wasn't against the rules. No one watched it. Like, and then when they're popular again, then all of a sudden it's shame on you. Like, and like, let's compare sports. In football, Groats, you're a football follower.
That's right.
People do steroids in football. They get a 4-game suspension. No one talks about it. They go to the Hall of Fame if they're good. It's not a big deal. In baseball, like last time I checked, steroids didn't make you hit a baseball. It's still the hardest thing to do in professional sports, hit a baseball. Steroids don't make you all of a sudden become an amazing hitter.
And Ryan, here's my pushback on that. I know steroids don't enable you to hit a round bat ball with a round object, but would you agree that steroids can aid in your recovery on a day-to-day basis when you're talking about a 162-game grind and have you feeling better each and every day?
Without a doubt, but the pitchers were doing it too. So
it's true. There's a lot of people that were doing steroids that will never even know that we're doing steroids, and that has always been so. Like, the whispers from hitters have always been, "Hey, yeah, we were doing, but go check out those pitchers." Here, I'll say a couple of things. He's right. Like, it was not well regulated while it was going on. The Major League Baseball, I guess it would have been Bud Selig then during the steroid era. He sort of, I mean, I don't know if it's blatant looking the other way, but maybe just not wanting to hear about it. I've heard many national reporters, ones that are still reporting and breaking news today, that have admitted that they were
aware
complicit,
of it,
but didn't do enough to investigate it or stop it or, you know, be the regulator of it, do what the media is supposed to do. So I do feel like we were all part of it. Now, here's the other part of it, why I do understand why people get mad. The numbers that Sammy Sosa put up were gaudy. You know what I mean? Historic.
He wouldn't have put up those numbers without that use of steroids. That's my point.
When you start to talk about home runs in the 60s, that's where you could have a legitimate gripe. And I understand what the caller is saying as well. We all look the other way. It was great for baseball. It was great for the Cubs. That's why I say the Cubs kept Sammy Sosa in jail too long. He ran things here with the Cubs. He filled that damn stadium on the regular, hitting home runs for teams that sucked. And there were moments for Sammy Sosa. Certainly 1998, the Cubs did go to the playoffs. He was part of that 2003 team, which ultimately failed, but was a fantastic team. So he was part of some big things with the Cubs as well. But when we start to look at the enormity of the numbers that he put up, that's why you can't fight against the people who are angry about Sammy Sosa.
I agree with you, and so that brings us to Sammy Sosa himself. Let's hear him in his own words back from CubsCon when he was welcomed back with open arms by ownership, and he was asked, does it bother him, Sammy Sosa, that people say his legacy is tainted?
No, man, don't lie, my friend. I don't really care who think about it or no. You know, my number is my number. Nobody can scratch my number from the board. I don't care what you say. So I'll move forward. You know, I do what I got to do, and I'm happy and I'm glad. And they show me tonight that my number count. So
can't take that away from him. He's right about that.
And that's why when you have the audacity to sit here, the gumption, the gall, and be like, well, Sammy's embarrassed. That man doesn't sound embarrassed. He sounds like a guy who's proud of what he did. He's like, hey, the means, they got to the ends, and everybody's happy, and they will give me a standing ovation when they see me on the Jumbotron today at Wrigley Field for the Mariners game.
But what about all the years where, up until now, up until the Cubs convention, where he was disowned by the Cubs? That Tom Ricketts is up there not wanting, getting sheepish about taking questions about Sammy Sosa at Cubs convention. You don't think he's back at home in the Dominican and saying and like having to answer questions to people about why he's not? Look at these numbers you can't take away from me. How come you're not in the Hall of Fame?
Did you hear the tone of what he just said? Not just what he said, but the tone. Did that sound like a man who was sorry for anything he did?
No, that's a different question. I don't think he's sorry.
Okay, that's
but I also
I don't think he's embarrassed.
I think his pride was hurt. Maybe that's a better way to put it. You don't think Sammy Sosa is one of the most prideful? He won't admit to using steroids. So that's pride right there. So you're telling me that you don't think that his pride has been hurt, that he's been embarrassed having to explain in his country where he is king, that Major League Baseball and the cuddly Cubs, where he ran things, disowned him up until this day, essentially.
708 on the text line, the BS non-contrite. Now just jump, because that's how many texts we're getting.
We're getting
the BS
non-contrite
is a huge problem. I will forgive anyone that can express contrition. Otherwise, it's just an accountability dodge. That's where I land on it. I appreciate Sammy Sosa and everything he provided to Cubs fans and Major League Baseball at large. But I can still, with a skeptical eye, say, you ain't sorry for what you did. You're sorry you got caught. I think you can say that. And for the texter 708, tell Marshall Harris to settle down. Sammy is back. Who cares? I mean, I know he's back. I'm good with that.
You're happy.
Guess what? It's a good thing that Sammy Sosa will get his due from the Cubs fans who appreciate him. But I also can recognize that man did something he shouldn't have done, and that's why he's not going to the Hall of Fame. And for me, that's punishment enough. He ain't going to the Hall of Fame.
No, he's not.
That's punishment enough. Let's go back to the phone lines.
I do think you should settle down, though, just in general.
We're stacked up. One more before we got to hit another break. Let's go to Tony on the Odyssey app. Tony, you're on 670 The Score. We're talking Sammy Sosa. What's up?
Hey, I think that that other caller was exactly right. Look, everybody profited off it. As far as steroids go, even Grody, you pretty much know absolutely nothing about steroids or what they do for you or what the side effects are. All you know is what the media is telling you. It's all BS because steroids are legal now. People go get testosterone replacement therapy. That is an oil-based drug. That is testosterone cypionate, and it's applauded nowadays if you have low testosterone. So all that nonsense.
If you use it correctly, absolutely. There's a lot of things that if you use painkillers correctly, they're going to be good for you. You're telling
what
me
is
that
correctly?
That
you
oh hold, hold on a second. Are you telling me that HGH and steroids didn't contribute to somebody hitting 73 home runs in Major League Baseball? You're right. Well, I don't know the ins and outs and the chemical makeups of steroids and HGH, but I damn well know that there's a correlation with the amount of home runs Sammy Sosa hit and Barry Bonds as well. And you know that too, man.
And the people who don't admit
don't
that are just lying to themselves.
I don't know that.
You do know that.
Okay, then if you don't know that,
you're smarter than that.
That means you haven't done enough research on the actual effects and
the
benefits
or you
of steroids.
Or you haven't watched baseball.
What are you talking about? There's been plenty of research that's been done on the effects of steroids in sports.
Dude, how do you
the recovery. The recovery.
How do you explain, sir? How do you explain somebody hitting 73 home runs in Major League Baseball then? Just give it to me. Lay it on me.
This is a huge problem with steroids. You're going to discredit 20 years of working out, all the training, all the everything they do, because you found out he took a shot. That's not fair. Those people are professional athletes.
We're not discounting everything that Sammy Sosa did. We're giving out the facts. We're giving out the truth. The truth is this guy.
You don't know. You don't know. You're assuming.
What do you mean I don't know? What are you talking about? This guy had 60 home run seasons in three straight years or four straight years?
How about the 100 guys that took steroids that you don't know about that didn't get caught? You know about them, too.
They weren't as good as Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds and Mark McGuire. They just weren't as good. But my point is this. I'm going to stop with this.
These are talented players. Like,
I appreciate
make no mistake
it.
About
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
like,
they're talented. Barry Bonds, you could take his career pre-steroids and after, and if you just took pre-steroids, he's a Hall of Famer.
Probably.
He just like got tired of looking at McGuire and Sosa getting all the love.
Yeah.
He said, all right, y'all want to play that game? Watch this.
I don't have a problem, like, forgiving Sammy Sosa. I'm down with like, I have. Like, because I think he did do jail time, like baseball jail time. He did. He's been a disgrace to people. He's been dissed by the Hall of Fame. He was dissed by the Cubs. So I think he served his time and maybe deserved to serve his time. But come on, man. Don't tell me that there wasn't a correlation with the home runs that were hit by Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds. And those are just the two examples that come to mind. We could probably come up with the top 10 list of guys who hit gaudy home runs. Jason Giambi stealing Frank Thomas's MVP once upon a time ago.
Certainly a sequel, although that game last night, the Cubs losing to the Brewers, felt like if we're doing sequels, that would be The Empire Strikes Back, because the Empire struck back with the Brewers, what they were able to do to the Cubs overall. But Pico Armstrong, great catch in the top of the eighth. Great home run to give insurance on the first pitch in the bottom of the eighth. Then the next day, we see him in his first at-bat hit another home run, becoming the fastest Cub to 2020 as we get back here from Gallagher Way live broadcasting along with Mark Brody. I'm Marshall Harris. This is Raheemy and Harris. Layla has the day off. Leading you up to Cubs Mariners here at Wrigley. Zach Zabin will do his pregame show from right here at Gallagher Way as well, starting at 12:45. It is all brought to you by IDOT, the Illinois Department of Transportation. Here with activities to show you how you can be a safe driving home from the game. Visit itsnotagameillinois.com to learn more. The IDOT booth just over to our right, just outside of Gallagher Way, we'll say.
Yeah.
That works. But Mark, you heard Pete Crow Armstrong talking about Sammy Sosa and his impact earlier in the show. He was on with Mullion Hall before we came on at 9:30. You can go back and listen to that entire interview on the Odyssey app. But he also talked a little bit about if this is a movie.
If this is indeed a movie starring Pete Crow Armstrong this year, how does it end?
I would like the final credits to start in the beginning of November. I think that would be the best way to finish it off. I don't want to be the star of a movie, if I'm being quite honest with you. I would rather it be some funny montage of the whole team and what we've done as a collective. You know, I think that would be the ultimate reward. So that's how I'd want our movie to end here is sometime after October when we can, you know, spend a little extra time in Chicago having some fun celebrating something.
So you hear that
scene.
First thing that came to my mind was the end scene credits, like after the credits of The Hangover. Because it's funny. It's hilarious. Like they go back to the camera and all the stuff that they missed because they are all drunk and what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And hopefully that it can be that kind of celebration for the Cubs in a season that movie's not released until November.
Ooh, blockbuster November. I like the idea. What came to my mind when I was hearing that is he should have just left it right at – he shouldn't have expanded anywhere beyond I would like to be playing in November. Scene, fade to cut. You know what the memory that I had was? This is a weird one, and I don't even know if it makes sense. I was thinking about the end of Hard Knocks last year in that final scene, which still gives me goosebumps. The final scene of Hard Knocks where it's Caleb Williams at the bench and they kind of slow it down and you just kind of hear him breathing and he says something to the effect of, you know, let's go. And then the scene fades and it's over and you feel like, yeah, something big. Now, something big didn't happen for the Bears last year, unless you consider losing 10 straight games.
That was pretty big.
A big deal. But I like the idea of the drama building and the dramatic music playing. We'll see you in November. Dun, 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 dun.
I want to say thanks to all the people who have texted and called today. I'm sorry we couldn't get all of your texts on. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We'll read some more texts. Let's start with Jim in Park Ridge. Jim, you are on Raheemy and Harris, Mark Grody in on 670 The Score.
Yeah, guys, thanks for taking my call. Let me just quick, we're Cub fans. We love our players. We back our players. But when we get fooled by our players, I felt fooled by Sammy Sosa. Fool me once, fool me twice. Too bad this game wasn't in August when the Devil or when the Rays were in town. We can give out a little promotional cork bat items to all the fans. Too bad. I got to quit. Another one for Grody. How can we get rid of Poles and get Ben Johnson, the guy, to come in? Have a good day, guys. Take care.
Wow.
Did he ask me how can you get rid of Poles?
He said, how can we get rid of Poles and get Ben Johnson and get whoever his guy is?
You want to know how, unfortunately? The way that – I'll answer this question seriously. If you want Poles gone, then don't root for his draft picks this year. Root for Colston Loveland to be a bust. Root for Luther. And I'm not, man. Like, I'm not root for any of that. I hope Brian Poles is around for a long time because that would portend success for the Bears. But that's the way. If his young guys don't sprout in this draft class, then Poles has got a problem after this year.
Needed some year one results, even though a year is a lifetime, I've been told by some people who run football teams.
A year is a lifetime.
Warren. Yeah.
A year is a lifetime.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Ned in Madison, Wisconsin on the phone.
Hello,
Ned. Welcome to Raheemy and Harris, Mark Grodian on 670 The Score.
Ned.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.